Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the February 2011 issue of Boys Life magazine. And our first article is pages 14 and 15, Boys Life Headliners. And here we're going to talk about Michael Cohen. He was born February 24th, 1998. His height is 5 feet 5 inches tall. His weight is 130 pounds. His hometown, Savannah, Georgia. Scout rank, 1st Class Scout Troop 7, Savannah. He made headlines by winning the 2010 National School Age Weightlifting Championship. The scoop? Michael won the 13 and under division by lifting 119 pounds in the snatch and 156 pounds in the clean and jerk, all in the family. The son of a 1980 Olympian and 2000 and 2004 U.S. Olympic team coach, Michael comes from a family of weightlifters, including his grandfather and mother. Michael practices three times each week. His other interests? Karate and football. The future, his goal is to become an Olympic champion. His advice, get all the experience you can and watch others to learn how they do it. Keep up with your practice. Don't give up. You can do it. All right, next we have Nick Skrogstad. He was born January 31st, 1994. His hometown, Burnsville, Minnesota. His scout rank, Life Scout, Troop 471, Burnsville. Venturing Crew, 437, Richfield, Minnesota. He made headlines by winning the Civilian Marksmanship Program and National Rifle Association State Championships. The scoop, in three-position sporter air rifle, competitors shoot in three positions, standing, kneeling, and lying down. Four-position events also include a seated position. Nick captains his air rifle team, Ventures Connor Dupe, 15, and Sam Ewert, 13, and Elizabeth Ewert, 11. At the 2010 state competition, they won team gold and all other gold medals. Nick won overall gold. Connor and Elizabeth won in their age groups. The team won bronze at the 2010 three-position air rifle Junior Olympics National Championships. The future. Nick plans to attend a technical college for specialized welding or mechanics. His advice? Find what you like. Have fun doing it. Do your best and practice as much as you can. Next we have Emmanuel Savory, age 12, hometown, Hollywood, Florida. He made headlines by winning the 2009 Men's Intermediate Junior National Figure Skating Championship and placing second in the 2010 U.S. Novice Men's Championship. The scoop. Emmanuel competes for the University of Delaware Figure Skating Club, where he skates 3 hours a day and works out in the gym 2 hours a day. 5 days a week, he skates a short program based on Super Mario Brothers. Best moves. I love doing all the triple jumps. It feels great spinning in the air and landing a difficult jump. I also like doing fast spins because the audience gives those the most applause. The future? Emmanuel hoped for gold in the 2014 Winter Olympics. Advice? Always believe in yourself, even when you have bad days. Keep going, because that's when you're getting closer to your dream. Next, we'll have Zachary Petzold, born March 6, 1992, hometown, Fair Oaks, California. Scout rank, Eagle Scout, Troop 217, Fair Oaks. Made headlines when he won the 2010 Metro PCS Community Scholars Program grand prize, a $25,000 college scholarship. The scoop? Zach topped more than 5,000 applicants nationwide through his exceptional community service and high academic standing. Other interests? Pole vaulting, rowing, key club, National Honor Society, Spanish club, glass arts. Zach's 3D stained glass art piece, a ship titled The Flying Dutchman, took first place and best of the class at the 2010 California State Fair. Volunteer awards. You can see how your efforts affect your community and make it a better place for everyone. The future? Air Force ROTC and majoring in political science at St. Mary's College in California. He hopes to join the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And just a few others. Ryan Schaefer, born March 9, 1993, his hometown, Mountain View, California. Scout rank, Life Scout, Troop 33, Los Altos, California. He made headlines by placing third in congressional debate at the 2010 Tournament of Champions and the National Forensic League Championships. These events bring together the country's top-ranked high school debaters. Taylor Richter, born November 17, 1997. His hometown, Leesburg, Georgia. Scout rank, First Class Scout, Troop 15, Albany, Georgia. He made headlines by volunteering for Operation Migration, a nonprofit organization that uses ultralight aircraft to return migrating whooping cranes to eastern North America. He has flown with the endangered cranes. Through Taylor's efforts, Georgia Senate Resolution 1016, recognizing November as Traditional Migration Month, was read and adopted. David Kotcher, born December 9, 1991, hometown, Sterling Heights, Michigan. His scout rank, Eagle Scout, Troop 254, Sterling Heights. He made headlines when he made the 2010 Macomb All-County Bowling Team. He recently bowled back-to-back perfect games during league play. In 2009, David's team, the Stevenson High School Titans, took the Division I Michigan High School Athletic Association State Team Championship. And now let's turn to After the Spill. And it starts with Louisiana scouts step up to help wildlife after an ecological disaster. Last April, an explosion on a British petroleum drilling rig off the Louisiana coast in the Gulf of Mexico started the biggest offshore oil spill in United States history. Almost 200 million gallons of oil gushed into the Gulf for nearly 3 months before the leak was capped. Oil spills caused extensive harm to wildlife and ecosystems, and scouts in Louisiana weren't just going to stand by while it happened. Here's what some of them are doing. Help us help them. When Tenderfoot Scout Rory McCracken, 12 of Troop 1, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, heard about the oil spill, his first concern was for the men who were injured or died in the accident and their families. Then he thought about the wildlife that would be affected by gushing oil. I've always loved animals and the ocean, Rory says. Newspapers printed up photographs of seabirds covered in thick black goo. Rory wanted to do something. Rory made a list of 72 animals that live in the Gulf and were endangered by the spill. Then he designed a blue T-shirt using the names of these animals to form a peace sign. The short says, "Help us help them." He launched a website, KidsLoveTheGulf.org, at which he sells the shirts and wristbands. Rory donates the profits to the Audubon Nature Institute's Louisiana Marine Mammal and Sea Turtle Rescue Program. The Audubon Nature Institute is Louisiana's official first responder for injured marine wildlife. During the first 4 months after the oil spill began, LMNSSTRP cleaned 187 sea turtles. In August, Rory and his family drove to New Orleans to make their first donation to the Audubon Nature Institute, $5,000. "We're going to take this as far as we can go," he says. "Our goal is to keep raising money and teaching kids about the animals in the Gulf and how we can all live together." So far, Rory has raised about $5,000 more. His scout troop helps with the T-shirts request, packing and shipping the orders. They have shipped shirts as far away as Anchorage, Alaska. A soldier in Iraq made a donation but told Rory to keep the shirt. Local businesses have helped many by hosting fundraisers and selling the T-shirts. Rory planned to become a marine biologist and has already earned his diving certifications. Through his website and talks to school groups and scout troops, Rory teaches about the Gulf and his ecosystems and wildlife. Hunting for Two. On the beach of a remote island off Louisiana in the Gulf of Mexico, members of Troop 405 of Lafayette, Louisiana, look for signs of the impact of the oil spill on wildlife and the ecosystem. As the sun beats down, the scouts come across the decayed carcass of a leatherback sea turtle. They take a GPS reading of its location, snap a photo, and mark it with a blue hard hat on a wooden post. The information the scouts collect at the Marsh Island Wildlife Refuge will be submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which is tracking the effects of the oil spill on wildlife in the Gulf. Members of the Wildlife Service will collect the turtle and determine if it died as a result of the oil spill. The sea turtles were probably most affected, says Eagle Scout Jake Parra, 14. Sea turtles are very sensitive to oil. When it gets on their skin, it irritates it. The scouts and other volunteers comb the beach looking for dead or injured wildlife, tar balls, oil in the water, and litter. They traveled about an hour on a fishing boat to the uninhabited island that is a haven for wildlife but rarely has human visitors. We jumped off the boat and walked in the waist-deep water, and then we spread out and walked about 8 miles along the shoreline, says Life Scout Timothy Andrews, 15. They also searched for ridge openings called washouts that would allow water and oil to enter a nearby marsh. The impairment openings are created by hurricanes and often are too small, sometimes just a few feet wide, to be mapped. We found 3 openings, Timothy says, adding that they did not see that oil had seeped into the marsh. The scouts also logged the air and water temperature and wind direction and tide levels. Groups of scouts plan to return every 2 weeks to log conditions, see whether they have changed, and report any useful info to the appropriate authorities in charge of the cleanup. The scouts were happy they found no oil and only 3 tar boils that looked as if they had predated the big spill. It was worthwhile to see that the beach was pretty clean of oil, Timothy says. Making the Right Call, pages 32 and 33. It has a picture here of a telephone. Looks like it's in a charged position. Dialing 911 might be one of the most important things you do, so be prepared to do it right. There's been an accident. Maybe your brother has broken his arm or your grandfather is having a heart attack. You know to call 911. But what happens then? Boy Scouts from Troop 169 and Cub Scout from PAC 3169 in Auburn, Indiana, got a behind-the-scenes tour of a 911 dispatch center. Under the direction of Eagle Scout William Bassett, the interim director of the 911 center in Fort Wayne, Indiana, the scouts saw how operators answer the calls, get the necessary information from the caller, input it into their computer system, and then send help. Where are you? The 911 calls are routed to a public safety answering point found across the country. The PSAP determines where the call needs to go next: police, fire department, or ambulance. Our first question is always, what's your address, Bassett says. Without that, we don't know where we need to go. If the caller has absolutely no idea of the location, most PSAPs now have enhanced 911. This feature gives dispatchers the phone number and location of the landline address. For cellular 911 calls, the phone company can help dispatchers find callers within a 50-foot radius, a process that takes about 30 seconds. Dispatchers are trained to answer 911 on the first ring, but don't be alarmed if there's a brief pause before they answer. This allows technology to find your phone number and location so your call can be answered at the proper 911 center. What happened? The dispatcher will ask for specific information. The most important, tell me exactly what happened. Other common questions are, if someone is trying to hurt you, how tall are they? What do they weigh? What is the person's age, race, and their color? Are any weapons involved? And hair color? If there was a car accident, how many vehicles are there? What kind of vehicles are they? Are the victims awake, alert? Are they breathing okay? The operator is trying to put together a visual picture of what's going on. If it's a true emergency, we'll keep a caller on the phone until a police officer arrives, Bassett says. We'll definitely stay on the phone and keep them calm and keep them talking. If we know they're in danger, for example, from an intruder, we'll tell them to get out of the area or, if indoors, to lock themselves in a room. Remote calling. What if you're in the wilderness using a cell phone or a satellite phone? Although modern technology allows a call from a satellite phone to be answered by a 911 operator, unlike a cell or landline call that is routed to a local PSAP, the person who receives your satellite-generated call might also be in a location far away. There's no guarantee that any 911 call from any device over any system, whether by cell phone, satellite, or landline phone, will go through as intended. So whether you're calling from a wooded area, the Grand Canyon, a skyscraper, a rural household, or the middle of one of the Great Lakes, it's important to be as prepared as possible with information about your location and situation. That way, no matter what happens after you dial 911, you'll be able to help them help you. And it has a picture here of look like they're in the 911 area and shows how the boys are watching what the operator is doing. Quick facts. Calling 911. Many years ago, people had to remember different numbers to call in case of an emergency. They had to know the number for the fire department if there was a fire, and the police department if there was a crime. Now all you need is 911. When the operator answers, be prepared by doing the following. State your name. Know where you are. If you're calling from a landline, your location will most likely be transmitted automatically to the dispatcher, but you should still know the street address just in case that technology fails. If you're calling from a cell phone, be ready to give the dispatcher the street names at a nearby intersection or some other information to help them find you. Report what's happening. Try to stay calm and describe the situation as best you can. I need to report a fire, or I need to report a car accident. Then try to answer the dispatcher's follow-up questions. Don't hang up. The dispatcher will likely summon help to your location immediately, but they might continue to ask questions. Don't hang up unless they instruct you to. Remember, dial 911 only for an emergency, such as a serious medical problem, a fire, a crime in progress, or any life-threatening situation. What are you waiting for? Pages 46, 49, and it has a picture of a young man looking up into the stars. The world is a lot bigger than this poor little corner of town. Young Matt Henson is itching to explore the world. Where does he go now? Swish, swish, rinse, swish, swish, rinse. Here's another load of dishes, Matt. Be sure and keep up. You've still got those pots and pans to wash. Yes, ma'am, said Matthew Henson. He tossed his head to shake off drops of sweat. The restaurant owner, a kind woman everyone called Aunt Jenny, paused as she headed out of the kitchen. Matt, you sure are looking glum these days. Don't tell me Baltimore Jack's filling your head with nonsense about the sea again, she said. I know I can't offer you much except a corner of the kitchen to sleep in, but if you stay, maybe someday you can take over when my old legs get too tired. Matt met her kind brown eyes. You know that I'm grateful for you taking me in, Aunt Jenny. And he was. After all, she didn't have to care for an orphan. That evening, Matt stepped outside and looked up, watching for the first star. Baltimore's Jack words came back to him. The world is a lot bigger than this poor little corner of town. I felt the air. Fair, fresh wind on my face. I've seen magnificent cliffs, islands with palm trees and mountains covered with snow. How old are you, Matt? Baltimore Jack had asked him that morning as he sipped Aunt Jenny's strong coffee. I just turned 13, Matt told him. The old sailor grinned. So, what are you waiting for? Matt, now Matt looked up at the stars twinkling back at him. They seemed to ask the same question. What are you waiting for? A few days later, Matt set out before dawn to walk to the harbor in Baltimore. Aunt Jenny stood in the doorway of her little restaurant. He looked back and waved. It was more than 40 miles. Matt slept one night curled up in a haystack in a field by the road. He wasn't hungry, though. Aunt Jenny had seen to that. She'd kissed the top of his head and said her door would always be open to him. She thinks I'll be back washing dishes by the end of the week, Matt thought, and maybe she's right. What ship will take on a skinny black kid? Baltimore Harbor. What a bustling place. Gulls screeched and swirled overhead. Men rushed about, loading and unloading wooden boxes of all sizes. And the ships, why, they were as beautiful as Baltimore Jack had always said they would be. But now what? Matt walked up and down. He wasn't interested in the small fishing boats. No, he had his sights on something else, a ship big enough to sail the world. He'd almost given up when he came to the end of the row. His heart stopped. This ship was clean and neat, ready for her next journey. Matt read her name, Katie Hines. He inched closer, and then by his shoulder, he heard a chuckle. You better close your mouth or a gull will fly right into it, said a man with a white beard. but she is pretty enough to make your jaw drop, if I do say so myself. You're the captain, sir? Matt said. The man touched his white hat. Captain Child, at your service. Matt suddenly felt bold. Please, take me as your cabin boy, sir. I'll work hard. I can wash dishes and cook. I've had some schooling. Captain Childs looked doubtful.
What about your folks?
Matt shook his head. I'm alone, sir.
I'm sorry, but 15 is the age for cabin boys, said the captain.
He was about to turn away. Matt stood as tall as he could and looked straight at the man with his bright, intelligent gaze.
Please, sir, give me a chance. You won't regret it.
You seem pretty sure of yourself for a young pup, the captain replied. How do you know you're cut out for a life of adventure?
Matt pointed up at the sky. The stars, sir. Whenever I see that first star appear, I feel as if it's calling to me to reach up, to be someone, to explore. Captain Childs raised his eyebrows.
Mighty big dreams you got there. What's your name, kid?
Matt, sir. Matthew Alexander Henson. The captain began to walk away toward his ship. Then he stopped. He turned and looked back.
Well, come along. Matt Henson, what are you waiting for?
Well, let's go to Bible Stories, page 43. After Joshua died, the people began to turn away from the Lord. Then the terrible king of Midian invaded the land and drove the Israelites into caves. During these times, the people would cry out to the Lord, and he would send leaders called judges to rescue them. This time, God chose Gideon.
God is with you, mighty warrior.
With me? If God is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all the miracles our elders tell us about?
Go now and cut down your father's household idols and build a true altar after them.
Would Gideon obey the Lord and lead his family away from idols? Before he could first fight Midian, he was going to have a battle in his own home. God called Gideon mighty, and he was about to make him so. Trail tips. On the trail, sleeping in the cold. A well-insulated sleeping bag is critical on cold-weather camping trips. Add layers, fleece clothing, mittens, a hat, and maybe even a second sleeping bag to stay warm. But don't get too hot. If you sweat at night, you'll get cold quickly. So ventilate by removing layers or openings in your sleeping bag. Use a foam sleeping pad to reduce the loss of heat to the cold ground beneath you. Of course, it has a picture here of the sleeping area and the young man sleeping on his little cot. Now to think and grin. Pages 55 and 56. Tom Swifty. She tore my Valentine in two, Tom said half-heartedly. And that's from Chris Wimberly in South Haven, Mississippi. Justin. What did the boy Candy say to the girl Candy?
John.
I haven't a clue.
Justin.
We're meant for each other. And that's Justin Roberts in Hampton Falls, New Hampshire. Dawson, what do pigs give on February 14th?
Brad, I don't know.
Dawson, Valen Swines. That's from Dawson Mock in Detroit, Michigan. Kristen, what is green and sings?
Taylor, beats me.
Kristen, Elvis Parsley. From Christian Rogers in Dallas, Texas. A Book Never Written, Flavorful Cooking by Mary Nade, from Samuel Scott in West Jordan, Utah. Ethan, what happened when the skunk wrote a book?
Stuart, I don't know.
Ethan, it became a best smeller. Ethan Young in Pleasant Town, California. Peter, how does an Eskimo repair his house?
Elaine, I don't know.
Peter, he uses igloo. From Eric Michael in Frisco, Texas. Jonathan, what do you call a high-ranking scout with a buzz cut?
Bruce, beats me.
Jonathan, a bald eagle. from Jonathan Bowman in North Richland Hills, Texas. A book never written. Making New Things by N. Ventor from Xavier Bailey in Dayton, Ohio. Tom Swifty. I like the rear of the ship, Tom said sternly, from Nicholas Aaron in Raleigh, North Carolina. Elise, what kind of cars do cooks drive? Roy, beats me. Elise, Chef Rollets, from Brian Schaefer in Brunswick, Ohio. Jack, why do giraffes have long necks? Jill, I have no clue. Jack, because their feet stink, from Alex Singh in Marietta, Georgia. Amy, what did the tree stump say to the newspaper? Megan, I haven't the slightest idea. Amy, I am your father. Amy Sullivan in Cross Plains, Wisconsin. A Book Never Written, Singing and Strumming by Sarah Nade, from Michael Yee in San Carlos, California. Definition, Cunningham, a smart pig, from Olivia Litkowski in Matthews, North Carolina. A Book Never Written, Potato Chip Flavors by Barbie Q. That's from Ryan Ryback in Parkside, Pennsylvania. Lynn, why is the sea so strong? Sandy, I don't know. Lynn, because it has a lot of muscles. Parker Alexander in Hartford, Connecticut. A Book Never Written, The Empire State Building by Vera Tall in Terry Crews. That's from Terry Crews in Redondo Beach, California. Definition, commentators, average potatoes, from Cameron Gates in Destin, Florida. A Book Never Written, Staying Calm by Terry Fide, Adam Chase, St. Louis, Missouri. William, what is a Frenchman's favorite game console? Angus, I have no idea. William, wee wee. Of course, Ian Knapp, Fairhaven, Vermont. A Book Never Written, New York Architecture by Brooklyn Bridge, Leela Friedlander in Arlington, Texas. Vihan, what do you get when you cross the universe with a toad? Pedro, I don't know. Vihan, Star Warts. That's from Vihan Kahana in Livingston, New Jersey. Zach, what did one flame say to the other? Scott, tell me. Zach, we're a perfect match. Zachary Schobert in Washington, Illinois. Charlie, why was 6 afraid of 7? Thomas, I don't know why. Charlie, because 7, 8, 9. Charlie Wright in Fort Worth, Texas. Brian, what kind of shoes do mice wear? Myrna, tell me. Brian, squeakers. Brian Morris in Wiska, Minnesota. Waseca, Minnesota. A Book Never Written, How to Fight Bulls by Matt A. Dorr, from William Schruckrud in Prairie Village, Kansas. Joshua, why did the rabbit go to the barbershop? Al, I don't know. Joshua, he needed a haircut, from Joshua Allen in Angola, New York. A Book Never Written, What Does It Do? By Appendix, Mark Thiel in Pickerington, Ohio. Keith, what is a ghost's favorite type of pie? Barb, I don't know. Keith, blueberry. Daniel Silver in Fairlawn, New Jersey. Alex, what is a spy's favorite kind of shoes? Liam, gee, I don't know. Alex, sneakers. Alexander Giannico in Norwalk, Connecticut. A Book Never Written, North American Birds by Ray Venn. Alexander Dickerson, Minister, Ohio. Well, we've run out of time for today's reading. I am John Ivy, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's reading. So long, till next time.